Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Pad Rich Wine Chat. Thank you so much for joining us here today. Chad, thank you. So, Chad, you are general counsel of Vesper Energy. And I know that that is an energy company that is focused on renewable energy sources. And I would say maybe even more importantly, you, like myself, work in Fort Worth, Texas, which is really exciting. So we don't have, it's a small little world. So I'm very happy to have you in my backyard. So Chad, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, Chad, I would love for you to tell the audience just a little bit about yourself and how you made your way to Vesper Energy.
Sure. So my background's a little bit different probably than most attorneys, especially most general counsel. So I actually, and it's a little bit of a longer story, but I started my career actually as a banker in Fort Worth for JP Morgan. And I worked with them for about 10 years, working up through the different ranks there. I've held many different jobs with them, all on the banking side, from credit to sitting on an investor desk to trading bonds, options, everything else, and doing estate planning. And it's that estate planning role that actually led me to law school. They actually suggested that I go to law school and help me in doing so, which was fantastic.
Oh, so I'm
one of the few folks, and I think maybe have been the first person at JP Morgan that they actually helped pay for law school at the time. So it was fantastic of them to do so.
Very exciting.
Yeah, so it was really nice. It was a great way to do it. And I went part-time at night with never a thought that I'd actually go practice law. That wasn't my intent. I was just doing it to get ahead in the banking world and to have something different than an MBA like everyone else had. But then kind of a pivot came. The banking changed quite a bit, and I decided that I did well enough in law school, I might as well try and see what it's like to go practice for a bit. And so from there, left and spent about 10 years, close to 10 years with Akin Gump. For them, I was in a corporate group, really focused on representing private equity clients, as well as a few big family offices, and just about everything that they did. And so that included a little bit of power and energy, but had a lot to do with technology. And actually, I probably did more data center work and technology work than I did anything else. And then at that point, realized I wanted to go in-house just for a little bit of a lifestyle change. And this opportunity here at Vesper Energy came up and came over here. So I was recruited over as the company's first and only attorney at the time. And so I've been building out the kind of legal team here since then, and obviously overseeing quite a bit here at the company. From a risk management side, from a legal side, I actually oversee IT here as well. So that's another kind of oddity to my background. And that's kind of it. That's how I got here.
That's it. It's a little bit more than that's it, Chad. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about what that dynamic is like. You've worked for huge corporations. You've worked for JP Morgan, big machine, international company, and transitioning. You've worked for big law. And then transitioning to, at one point, a legal department of one. I my first job right out of law school, I was a legal department of two. And I had the illustrious title of AGC, but I was the lowest man on the totem pole in the legal department. And it's interesting dealing with less resources, and you're working so closely with the business people because it's just you and the business people. What's that shift been like for you, Chad?
For me, actually, it was easier than I think I expected, because I was able to come in and resource-wise, I was given, while we didn't have anything, they gave me a lot of rope to go get what I needed. And so I was able to come in and immediately implement tools that I wanted to use in shape. I brought in a lot of the tools that I used to use from my law practice Just even a simple example is like Latera, right? A simple platform to allow me to compare documents. Research tools I was able to go get and procure. And then I just used outside counsel a ton to help where I needed to and fill in gaps. And then from the commercial side, that's really what I was looking for to make a move. Is I've never really considered myself a pure attorney. I always consider myself more of a banker business person than a true attorney. And so that was part of the transition that I really was looking forward to and wanted to involve myself in. And in all the companies I talked to, that was one of the big pieces of what brought me to Vesper, is that I could help shape the company, things of that nature, and really be involved in more than just pure legal and strategy and business as well.
Well, let's talk about the business of Vesper Energy. Now, it's no surprising that you work for an energy company in Texas. Like, those two go together like peanut butter and jelly. But you're working for a renewable energy company. Can you explain what all that scope covers, Chad?
Yeah, no, definitely the other side of energy in Texas, especially in Fort Worth, which is big oil. In my old client base, it used to be big oil as well, or a lot of them. But so what Vesper Energy does is we do what's called utility scale renewable energy. And what we focus on right now is just solar and then battery energy storage. So what we call BESS as well, and then integrated solar plus BESS facilities. So there's, and that's it. So we don't do currently any projects involve wind, you know, carbon capture, or other items. So we're focusing on mainly those two technologies at the time. The company may expand into others at some point, but right now that's our main focus. And when I mentioned utility scale, what I mean there, it's very different than your rooftop systems or your commercial systems. These are big, large facilities. An example of it is we're building a project out in West Texas that's 600 megawatts. So for an example, that's about six and a half square miles of solar panels.
Wow.
Which is 1.3 million solar panels that'll be installed. And that 600 megawatts is, I think it's about 180,000 homes it can power just on its own if it wanted to. So we use, what we do as a company is we contract in for the most part with corporations and sell power to them instead of just directly to the grid. So we sell to different corporations to help them meet their ESG goals, things of that nature as well.
You just mentioned some letters I was going to ask you about ESG. ESG is, I think, an increasingly important topic. You know, it's something that's become more relevant, I think, in the last maybe 4 to 5 years. I'd love to hear your thoughts on like how you've gotten exposed to it through Vesper Energy and what that landscape is looking like.
Yeah, and the focus on ESG is pretty broad, but the focus on purely the kind of sustainability part, which is really where we get involved as a company. Obviously, we have our own ESG goals that are broader than just that. But from the sustainability piece, we help a lot of corporations meet those type goals through various credits, them being able to purchase power that they know is from a clean energy source. So what we'll do is we'll contract with a big publicly traded entity that has manufacturing, things like that. And we'll enter into what's called a virtual power purchase agreement, typically. And with that, they're buying essentially environmental attributes from a project and then doing a swap hedge effectively on the actual power price. But that allows them to maintain and know where their energy is coming from, as well as get other environmental attributes that help go to their ESG goals that are stated in their various reporting requirements.
In essence, to offset their carbon footprint, right? Like at a very like basic level, which with that comes potentially, you know, credits or meet certain environmental goal, corporate goals. That's something that Vesper is able to provide for people. And I think what's interesting is we're hearing a lot of talk about emerging technologies. That's obviously a topic of discussion on this podcast, one of them being AI, another one being blockchain as well. It's often talked about the amount of energy that's necessary to train these models, to use these generative AI models. And what I find so exciting about what you all are doing is there's the benefit of using emerging technology in the energy space via renewable energies to help address some of those energy demands in the technology field. Is that something you're coming across in your business?
It is. So it's something we work with, obviously, big consumers of data and electricity throughout the U.S. And right now, some of the biggest and actually some of the biggest purchasers of power from renewable energy sources are companies that have large data centers, we'll say. So that's, and actually the largest buyer is a company that has large data centers scattered throughout the U.S. And on that side of things, they are in, if you sit in on any of the ISOs, the independent system operator calls, public calls, where they're talking about the health of their grid, the future of their grid, what they're expecting, you're hearing a consistent theme across the U.S. from all the independent operator, all the ISOs, of that they are resource constrained and that they're concerned that they need additional resources to come online. And the big concern is because of what they call large loads. And that effectively now is, you know, what they're referring to are data centers, blockchain, Bitcoin mining. It's those type of, for them, consumers that are really putting stresses on grids that they're not able to keep up with the demand. PJM in particular, which covers kind of the Northeast US predominantly, has really come out and said that they're concerned about that side of things. And at the, you know, it's difficult for them to project how they're going to deal with the load requests and things that are coming in from those type of data centers. And part of that issue is the data centers and AI centers have grown so much in just the last few years. Back when I was representing clients that were building developers of data centers, there were a big facility was 400 megawatts. And now you're hearing about multiple gigawatt facilities. And the amount of stress that puts on a grid and the transmission lines and everything else is incredible. And I know there's been instances where even local operators haven't been able to show up as contracted because they knew that they didn't have the ability to get the load to the facility. And so that slowed down some development and caused issues elsewhere.
Well, I would imagine, and this is not your area of expertise, but I'd love to know if you've heard any conversation just like generally out there. I would think that there's a lot of innovation that's happened around the development of these technologies, mm-hmm. be it blockchain or an LLM. And it seems what would make sense is how can we use that our really smart minds to lessen the lift that's necessary to run these? Like how we've made them big and powerful. Now, how do we make them like lean and powerful? Are you hearing people talk about that at all?
Yeah, that's been a discussion for a while, is how to make the systems more efficient. And I just haven't seen much go that way. Unfortunately, we've seen, and what I've seen is it go the opposite way, is you're seeing these processors and servers and everything else and these data centers go the opposite way. They're becoming more power hungry than less. Even though the size of them and the computing power is going up, it's just the amount of data that's being consumed and that is required is outpacing the ability to of the efficiency that we're able to create on the other side. And so it's just, and especially on the AI front, the amount of data that's required to run those is just growing exponentially. And so it's growing faster than we can keep up on a technology side to improve the efficiency.
Yeah, it's an interesting, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, finish your point, and I'll bring up one interesting way that we are seeing in our industry of ways to help this. But let's finish that point real quick, and then we'll go to that.
Yeah, I think in the development of AI, generative AI systems, it seems like the triumvirate of things that are key to allow them to grow the way they have, it is like that combination of compute, data, and power, right? All of those things are needed. And compute, maybe we largely have in play, but power potentially is going to be a challenge for us, and data is going to be a challenge for us as well, right? We've had the benefit of two decades worth at least of publicly available information on the internet that's been used to help train these data sets. But that well is not going to fill up as quickly in real time. That then begs the question of, we then have to leverage synthetic data to supplement, knowing that also what's possibly going to get trained on is things getting published that is created by generative AI. And then, of course, the power discussion. Are we going to overstress infrastructure? So it could be an interesting few years to see, will that growth kind of plateau out because of those thresholds that we start hitting?
No, it will. The data side is interesting to see where it goes. And that's a piece that scares me from a legal side, because as soon as you start using synthetic data, you start having a little bit of garbage in, garbage out problem. And so that's a concern for a whole different reason that's kind of beyond my expertise these days. The power side's interesting, because what you're seeing now, and you've seen in the news it really in the last month and a half, is you're starting to see some of the real big data center players take matters in their own hands on the power side. And you're seeing them start to look at different ways to bring their own power. And so you've seen, I think it was, and I maybe mentioned the wrong company, I think it was Microsoft announced that they are in a partnership to bring in some small nuclear plants. I believe Amazon's done the same thing, that are essentially going to be behind the meter plants for their data center facilities in different locations. So what they're saying is they're going to go and create a power source that goes along with their data centers, because they see the problem and know that in 5 years, having the ability to get PJM or one of these really constrained ISOs to get you power, especially to a gigawatt, 2 gigawatt facility, the way these things are going, is tough. And they're seeing that as such a problem that they're now looking to say, okay, do we need a partner to bring the power with us to this site to be able to make this happen? And a lot of those we're seeing is on the nuclear side, the small nuclear piece, or even larger nuclear plants. But there's also interest in that on our side of things, on the renewable energy side of things, even though it's an intermittent resource, meaning that during nighttime, obviously solar doesn't work, but the batteries can. The problem with the battery side of what we do is they're too short a duration right now. The technology still has to improve a little bit for the data center side, because you got to get the reliability aspects there. They have their SLA events, they have to keep things of that nature.
Yeah.
And so instead, you're starting to see kind of a trend of, in some states like Ohio, is put forth a what used to be pretty common in community solar. So that's your rooftops or what you see, on buildings, things of that nature, which is called net metering. So you think about your house, you pull first from the solar that's on your house and then from the grid once you run out of that. And so Ohio actually put a virtual net metering proposal forward, from what we understand. And so that would allow you to do that anywhere and not just behind the meter, which is interesting. So there are certain states, certain places that are thinking ahead in ways to do this. And other places that, in a lot of developers like ourselves, are talking to folks about, can you do things behind the meter? So can we build a facility to power a large load for them to use, and then again, use that net metering type system to where when we're offline, because it's an intermittent resource, which is a challenge for a data center, to then pull from the grid. And in certain states, you can do that. The regulations are there. It's difficult because you have a lot of different things at play with the local transmission operators that don't love those all the time, and different regulatory aspects that make it hard. But that is a way that you can start solving these power problems, is to come and bring the power with you, especially if you're a data center developer of, well, I have a gigawatt facility, but I'm bringing 600 megawatts with me. So I only need 400 and this part intermittently. Plus it's bringing extra jobs, things like that, which help on the permitting side of things. But that's what we're really seeing as a partnership.
And then if it has the ESG element to it, I think that it addresses some concerns that people have as far as the impact of generative AI to the economy or to the environment, excuse me. But I would love to know, I hear a lot about generative AI and how it can actually be used to help keep an eye on and protect the environment, because it can notice trends or it can minimize waste. Is that something that you all have looked into in your own business?
We have. And so we're actually using some portions of AI in different facilities. And we've studied that in different facilities as well, to where from a simple use of it from a, if you think about when a big field of solar panels, right? It's a giant field of glass, essentially, that has, pieces in between that actually can be used for farming or other pieces. But one of the biggest risks to our facility is severe convective storms, so things like hail.
Oh, yeah.
And there are models that we use, and we use AI to help with this and predict when we have hailstorms coming to a facility or within a vicinity of this facility. And it can then trigger all of our panels to go into stow. So essentially, what they'll then do is flip the panels to where the glass is facing away from the wind. And that way, if the hail comes down, it bounces, a glancing blow instead of directly onto the panels. So kind of a simple use of how we're using it to help our facilities, not be damaged from a risk management standpoint, and also not to be breaking glass, be wasteful, things of like that that could cause issues as well. So that's one kind of interesting use of it, is just predicting weather trends, things like that. We also use it on the trading side of things as well, not necessarily ESG related, but on a battery energy storage project. Those are projects that essentially you charge a bit, if they're standalone, you charge a battery when power prices are low in a certain region. So if you're in California during the day, solar penetration is so high that power prices actually tend to dip negative. And so you charge your battery then, and then you discharge at night when prices go up, because those generation things are no longer online. And so you can use AI to help you predict those trends as well, which is a big help because it's just more efficient, it's easier, it's more predictable, and they can see things faster than most people can.
So many ways that AI could be used that people may not realize. So I do want to hear what you think about, I mean, you are an attorney, and of course, there's a lot of chatter about the impact of AI to the legal profession. And I think hearing your perspective, your take, not only being in-house counsel, having worked big law, but also having more of that, like you were kind of more business-minded first and then found your way into legal. What's your take? What are your thoughts on the integration of generative AI into the legal profession?
Yeah, I think it's having a pretty profound impact already, and I think it's going to continue to go that way. So we've integrated, at least here, a few different AI tools into our company as a whole, and then into just the legal practice, some of which we're still getting in practice, but it's a huge help. And from an efficiency standpoint, it's allowed us to stay pretty lean and keep a pretty small legal team. And just as an example, we use an for the company as a whole, we use an AI writing tool to assist not only the legal team, but the broader company as well, just with professional writing, grammar, things of that nature. Because one thing, when you have a company that's a good portion of its engineers, it's always helpful.
Yeah.
So same with me, I'm not always the greatest writer at times. So it's great to have just that catch extra thing to look at. And also for a generative AI, it's helpful to have just in case you get stumped when writing something of that nature. So use that from a company standpoint. And then we also use an AI-based contract management tool as well. That's been a huge help for us. And we're still probably 85%, I'd say, into the integration of it. But it's allowed us to start streamlining our process for contract creation and contract review. So now we create contracts through that system. Makes it a lot easier. It makes it to where the legal team here doesn't have to create all the contracts. Or any of employee inside of the company can do on their own, and then send it out to clients. And then when we get it back, it automatically runs red lines for us. And actually, we'll come back, and this is the part we're still tweaking with predictive red like changes based on our playbooks.
How are
So
you
it's actually
finding that? Are you finding
it's
it
pretty
very
good.
effective?
So still tweaking it a little bit, and it's taking some learning, but it allows us to cut some steps out.
Did you already have that playbook in place, or did you know to effectively
No.
roll this out, I need to have kind of this rule book set up?
Yeah, no. So we've created it for ourselves. I think my guess is that'll change a little bit, The other interesting thing in that inside of that tool is I can highlight language and it'll give me suggested language from, I don't know if it's pulling from other people's playbooks, but the generative AI that it gives me of, hey, make this indemnity more concise is phenomenal. It's really good at those type things. So when we're simplifying contracts to go to a single contractor that's going to do mowing at a project, something like that, an idea to simplify a contract, it does a great job and saves me or my AGC 10 hours from having to redraft a simplify contract. So it's really been helpful in a time saver for us.
I think that is a huge benefit, like for in-house, especially a small in-house department and contracts that there's a lot of sales deals rolling through. It always hits on a Friday afternoon and the salespeople want your feedback or your drafts or your red lines ASAP. And if there's anything that we can defensively leverage that also lets people have their lives back. Because sometimes I think the old thought was you go in-house and it's like an easier gig, but I don't really think that's necessarily the case anymore, right? So it's we're increasingly in more and more demand, right? Whether we're at the law firm or in-house. And having that assistance, it's been if certain contracts are maybe lower risk, more standard, I think. And knowing that there's a human in the loop, obviously there is. You all are closely training it and editing it. That's exciting to hear. What do your colleagues think about it? Like, are they all in on it too, or are you the one kind of championing the AI to them?
So I'm definitely the one championing it, but everyone's coming along and enjoyed it so far. So the AGC is really into it as well and championing that process as well. Because to be honest, it probably affects his day-to-day more than it does mine in some sense. So really it's been great. And it'll be interesting to see. We haven't run a sales process or anything like that through it where we're getting hundreds of NDAs yet. But I'll be curious to see how that type of process goes. Because and what's interesting is we previously would go to outside counsel for those type processes. And well, I don't know if we'll need to anymore on something of that nature. So and something that, outside counsel doesn't love NDAs anyway. They're a pain. So not something I mind bringing in-house. If we could just take care of it and AI can take care of NDAs, that'd be great. Even though I feel bad for the first years that do learn a lot off of that.
It's a challenge. It's like you have to be thoughtful of it from that perspective too, right? That there is a certain level of muscle memory that comes into play whenever you do those rote things. But maybe the flip side is you get to more sophisticated work faster and you build up your muscle memory there. So I think, and definitely the work is not going away. It's really just going to get filled with something else. So
I think
well,
that's right.
I would love to hear your thoughts on how you see the energy law profession changing. Because I know there seems like there's a track of the established oil and gas that's been around for a long time, the increased availability and innovation around renewable sources, emerging energy sources, in line with discussions of how energy is so important to technology and the burden that that place on infrastructure. What do you foresee in the next 5 or 10 years in energy law practice?
Yeah, I think it's going to be similar to what it's been in the last couple of years. So I'll actually, and some of it'll depend on what happens in this election cycle as well. It's been an interesting few years in the industry on the renewable energy side and on the oil and gas side from a political and headwind standpoint. There's a lot of policy and a lot of those issues that continue to press against both industries. So I think from the legal side, I think you'll see a lot of people continue to focus and maybe even more focus on those aspects, especially if we do see a very large amount of tariffs start coming in. Because obviously that changes what we do in our practice a little bit. But that's actually one thing that surprised me when I came to Vesper is how much of my time spent on policy and international trade and things like tariffs. Because that has a huge impact in what we do and the cost of our goods and everything that we build. And I think that's going to be another trend that continues in the next few years is a huge focus on that in trying to be efficient and trying to domesticate some of that to help reduce those risks, if that's the case, and how we can do so, how we can structure to make sure that we're not running into those problems. The other trend that we've seen is we've seen a lot of people start to cross over between oil and gas and renewable energy. And I think you're going to continue to see that as well from the law side of things. And that's a lot of when oil and gas slowed down, you started to see a lot of people kind of transition over to alternative energy. We saw that at old law firm. You've seen that at some other law firms as well. And people start to pick up as a portion of their practice because it's not that much different. A little bit of renewable energy, whether it's from a real estate standpoint, just pure real estate, because a lease is a lease for the most part.
Right.
Surveys are surveys, things like that. You just got to know little bits and pieces to look at. And so I think you may continue to see people in the traditional energy space expand their practice a little bit, especially in the next couple of years when you're seeing oil and gas actually start to integrate renewable energy into what they do. Because you're starting to see, especially in the Permian Basin, some of those oil and gas fields actually look to electrify because they're finding out it's cheaper to do that than to continue to run on fossil fuels. So you're starting to see more of a partnership between traditional oil and gas and renewable energy as well, instead of just a clashing of heads. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see more traditional oil and gas attorneys dabble into what we do or make a transition into more of what we do.
That is really interesting. And it makes sense. You're diversifying your training set, Chad, right? It can only have benefits, you know, in many ways. Chad, we're getting close to the end. I would love to hear like your closing thoughts, your key takeaway that you'd like to share with the audience for this episode.
Yeah, I think from that side of things, people need to realize that renewable energy, in particular, kind of solar and BESS, has an extremely important role in the AI and data center space. And a lot of those groups need to continue to partner together, and they're starting to do and finding ways to work together so that we can solve these constraint issues and these transmission issues that are really going to be plaguing both industries for quite some time. And we're starting to see that more and more, I think, in our industry. I think that needs to continue. And the more people that can hear that, look, there are so many good ways that the technology side of things and the renewable energy side of things can come together to solve those problems, the better. And that's just pure from the business side. And then the legal side of things, the integration of AI, I think, scares a lot of people. And it shouldn't. And it should, right? It shouldn't, because it can make your quality of life so much better, and it can improve our work product and our efficiency tremendously. And so I think that part of it's fantastic, but it does pose some issues. And I do have some concerns on the impact it will have on young attorneys in particular.
Yeah.
As some work and simple work, especially on a contract side, is moved to a process like what I talked about that is more automated. And that's what a lot of young attorneys cut their teeth on. And so that's my, the kind of, it's really good, but scary at the same time. That's my one concern with it, is that some of that early work stuff may not be there. And so people are going to have to jump in and go complex real quick. And that's harder to do. And not everyone's equipped to always do so.
And I think that's where the partners or senior associates, like that, you really do have to be very intentional when you mentor and you work with young attorneys. So and I think it's going to be even more important because of those things that you mentioned, you know? So I think those are all excellent points. And I really love the point you made about collaboration between renewable energy and emerging technologies. I couldn't agree with you more. So, well, Chad, thank you so much for joining us in this episode of Cassie And. I know I've learned a lot from you today, because renewable energy isn't something I know that much about. And I'm sure my audience has as well. And to my audience, thank you for joining, and we look forward to you joining the next episode of Cassie And.